Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Well, folks, we're sure glad you stayed on during the break. I really hope that you enjoyed Dr. Michael Hill. That man is a jewel, especially nowadays. You know, I've told a lot of my friends that most people, and I say this with all sincerity, very few people under the age of, I'm going to say 50, 45 or 50 years old, they don't know what a real man is. I'm talking about a man like my dad. My dad was in World War II. He went into the Pacific, fought in some of the most bloodiest, most savage fighting that the world has ever seen. You know, a lot of people don't know what really went on in the Pacific in World War II. It got to be like a genocide. It really was. I mean, you have no idea of the hatred, the sheer raw hatred that existed in the Pacific on both sides, that the Japanese had for the Americans had for the Japanese. He came from that. Before he went into that hellhole, he grew up in, I call it Hard Rock, Kentucky, Bloody Breathed County, Kentucky, man. Before they had any type of cheese trucks, before they had welfare, food stamps, any of that stuff. He got caught making whiskey when he was 16 years old to try to keep his brothers and sisters from starving to death. He did like 10 days in jail for that and got out. You know, he went into the Army. He weighed 142 pounds. The guy gained, when he came out of basic training, he weighed 175. He said it was the easiest life he'd ever had. The first time in his whole life he'd ever had more than two square meals a day. He had three. He could not believe how much food they got in basic training in the Army. But the guy was hard rock. I know Matt said that, you know, he talked about his grandfather digging splinters out of his hands with a knife. I mean, these people, you try to be a man nowadays and these perfume princes, they just fall apart. But I'm going to tell you what, you know what, when it hits the fan, when the crap hits the fan, we're not going to be looking for perfume princes in these Yaleys and these PhDs sitting behind the walls, these guarded tower walls, giving their long-winded, worn-out speeches that we've heard over and over and over. When it hits the fan, to borrow a quote from General Patton and from my dad, when it hits the fan, they call for the SOBs. And that's who we are on this show right here. We're going to be the SOBs. We're going to be people who, we're not going to be looking for the PhDs. And with that, people, I love Dr. Hill. Dr. Hill was just our last guest. He was a PhD. He's a Renaissance man. The man can get in there and write with the best of them. He can write with, you know, with a PhD in English. He taught history. And, you know, I'm so glad, too. I want to talk about my co-host, Matt Goodwin. He's been on us the first hour. We're bringing Jacob Tyler on in the second hour. And we're going to try to let it go. I'm getting ready. I'm going to throw a few topics out there. I want my young guys to take over. I'm going to try to get out of the way and ask a question or two. But, guys, I'd like to let you know, and I blame myself for this. We miss the Holodomor Holocaust Memorial Day. It was about 2 weeks ago. I meant to bring that to mention it on the show. You know, we're always hearing about the Holocaust, the holo hoax, as Winston Smith calls it. It is a holo hoax that we hear. They're getting ready to bring out that crappy movie again, Schindler's List. We call it Swindler's List. What a crock! What a fable, man! That was just an out and out lie. You know, and we need to educate ourselves about that. We also my fault, we forgot to mention the JFK Assassination Day. I think that was on November the 23rd. I lived through that, and this country has never been the same. The JFK marked the point when our country went all the way over the edge, and we're taken over totally by the intelligence community. And folks, y'all can chime, my men, Jacob and Matt, if y'all want to chime in on that. Well, I also like to talk about how I've totally lost. We have no representation in this country anymore, people. Our courts are nothing but hog walls, pigsties, where they have these left-wing communists come in and they drag in our good people. We have people locked up in Charlottesville, and that's just the ones we know about. We have hundreds of people. I was talking to Rudy Davis today. He said he could talk about political prisoners for a month, and talk about a different one every 10 minutes. They're out there. They have political prison camps all over the United States. You can go in and listen to Tex Morris's video back in the 90s. We can talk about that. And, guys, we can talk about Simon Roche. You know, our good brother Simon Roche gave a big speech before the EU. I think it was yesterday. So, guys, that's some of the you know, the courts. We don't have courts. We have stinking lynch mob hog wallows. And with that, Matt, you and I have been on. I'm going to welcome Jacob Tyler on right now. Jacob, are you there, son?
I'm here. Hey, guys. Hey, Jacob.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. You missed I'm going to shut up, but you missed a dynamite. The only thing with Dr. Hill is too shy. He doesn't really get the message out there in hard enough terms. You know,
I know, right? Of course, I'm he's Mr. Casper Milquetoast in his delivery.
But, he's Milquetoast. Jacob, do you have any topics you want to bring to me and Matt tonight? When you get the topics, I want you and Matt to kind of take over run this because y'all got more sense than I do. I forget where I am sometimes, guys. So do you have anything special you'd like to talk about? I threw a few topics out there for y'all I think we do need to adjust to address the Ukrainian Holodomor, the Holocaust Memorial a week or two ago, and what we need to also address what's going on with James Phil. I know Matt's real hard about that, and we can talk about Simon Roche. Would you like to take that in, since you're the next guy on, Jacob, would you like to go in any particular order, son?
Let's just start with Holodomor. That sounds. I mean, we could dedicate a few shows to that, you know, all by itself, I'm sure. So let's just go in the order you talked about. That's a great lineup of topics right there.
So, okay, I want you and Matt to take that, and I'm just going to kind of referee.
People may not know what the Holodomor is. I think a lot of our audience does, but let's just clarify that. Explain it to them, Jacob.
Well, you might have to interject a few of the details in terms of the exact timeline and everything, Matt. But during the rise of the Bolsheviks in Russia, you know, there was various periods of turmoil. Well, the whole thing was a period of turmoil, but there were numerous major events that went on throughout that, and the Holodomor was just one of them, involving the intentional starvation of tens of thousands? Or was it more up in the hundreds of thousands?
It was millions. It was millions, Jacob. Millions. The primary years were 1932 and 1933, and it's been estimated, depending on who you read, anywhere from 6 million, the low count, to up to about 11 million, the high count. But go on. And you know what? And I'll say one more thing. And it was run pretty much by what they call the Cheka of the old Soviet Union of the 20s and 30s and 40s. And the Cheka was composed primarily of 95% Jews. They took those people, starved them. The ones they didn't starve to death, they sent them to Siberia, to the largest concentration camps in the world. Were not in Nazi Germany. They were in the Soviet Union. They worked millions to death, probably up to 30 million that they killed. Now, with that, I'm going to shut up and go back to you, Jacob and Matt.
So those numbers are staggering. I always err on the conservative side if I can't remember correctly. And even as someone who's already heard about that, I mean, that's shocking.
Go, Jacob. We got to go to a break. And the next when we come back, we'll have a longer segment when we come back, son. But anyway, people, I'm really glad we got Jacob on. I'm glad we got Matt. And we're going to light it up when we come back after this break. So thank you for tuning in.
Anyone who challenges their control is deemed a sexist, a racist, a xenophobe, and morally deformed. They will attack you. They will slander you. They will seek to destroy your career and your family. They will seek to destroy everything about you, including your reputation. They will lie. Lie, lie, and then again, they will do worse than that. They will do whatever's necessary. The Clintons are criminals. Remember that. They're criminals. I'm going to open up our libel laws so when they write purposely negative and horrible and false articles, we can sue them and win lots of money. We're going to open up those libel laws.
Okay, listen up, people. I'm beating the bushes for a few good men. I don't want you boys the alt-right. I want the hardcore of the hard right. And I need you front and center, boots on the ground, at a minute's notice, in the streets, and I need your money. You know the problem that the whites of the world face. It's the all-too-real threat of global extermination. And you know what's going on in South Africa and Western Europe. And unless you're semi-comatose, you've already seen the first stages of white genocide unfolding in our country. Our culture is under constant full-scale attack by our enemy. The enemy never sleeps. They spend day and night wrecking the monuments and the graves of our beloved kin. They attack us physically everywhere we go. They've already taken the linen and our stone. Now they're coming after our flesh. And if you're not too squeamish, if you want to be part of the number one white advocacy group and the number one white civil defense group in the United States, then contact Eddie Bombardier Miller at BloodRiverRadio.com. And please, please donate. And God knows you need us as much as we need you. Thank you.
Each week, the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, the Political Cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today.
The Innis is a 44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off. You've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, Bunk?
Well, people, I can tell you right now, I feel lucky because I got two of the finest co-hosts in the face of the planet. They can think circles around me. They're sharper than I am, faster than I am, more tech savvy than I am. And I'm so glad to have them on. I really am. I could not possibly do this without them. And even with their help, I'm so old, you know, and forgetful, I could still barely do it, even with them. But, Jacob, I'm going to go back to you. I think you were talking about, Holy Demora, and would you like to finish up on that before we go to some of the other topics we mentioned?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And thank you for the kind words. It's an honor for me to be on with you guys. So, but yeah, you know, I really appreciate you saying that, and I'm thrilled to be here. But while
the honor's mine.
While we were in the break, I went ahead and just so you know, for the benefit of the audience and everything, and to refresh my own memory on some of these details, I brought up the holodomorct.org website, which is just a treasure trove of information from A to Z on this event. And I thought it would be good to, a little bit of structure for what we're talking about here and for the benefit of the audience, too, we could skim through this timeline that they have posted here on the website. And you guys I think both of you guys are definitely a little better versed in the specific details on it. So I was thinking perhaps I could read off some of the things in this timeline here, and then you guys feel free to jump in and interject any commentary you have on that. Does that sound good to you?
Please do. And I'd like to also comment. You see, people, what I'm talking about, just during the break, my low co-host Jacob and Matt does the same thing. They pull all this information up just like out of a hat. It would take me 2 hours to do that. So you go for lay that on us, Jacob. And Matt, you tune in when you get ready, son. So take off, Jacob.
So one of the most important aspects to remember about Holodomor, obviously, is that it wasn't government bureaucracy run amok. This wasn't some kind of it was incompetent people in government, and the government gets overwhelmed in a disaster and bad things happen and people get hurt, and yeah, it's tragic, but what can you expect? They did the best they could. This isn't anything even like that. The central detail to Holodomor, of course, is that it was a planned and a intentional genocide. And so just going through the basic timeline here, and Matt, you jump in anytime you want here, but I'm just going to start from the beginning of this timeline, and for anyone who wants to read it themselves, it's posted on holodomorct.org. So Beginning in 1917, the Bolsheviks, led by Vladimir Lenin, take power in Russia. In 1922, the Soviet Union is formed, with Ukraine becoming one of the republics. 1924 rolls around, and after Lenin's death, Joseph Stalin ascends the power. As of 1928, Stalin introduces a program of agricultural collectivization that forces farmers to give up their private land, equipment, and livestock, and join state-owned factory-like collective farms. Stalin decides that collective farms would not only feed the industrial workers in the cities, but could also provide a substantial amount of grain to be sold abroad, with the money used to finance his industrialization plans. In 1929, the following year, many Ukrainian farmers, known for their independence, still refused to join these collective farms, which they regarded as similar to returning to the serfdom of earlier centuries. Stalin introduces a policy of quote-unquote class warfare in the countryside in order to break down the resistance to his collectivization agenda. The successful farmers, or kurkuls, pronounced kulaks in Russian, are branded as the class enemy, and brutal enforcement by regular troops and secret police is used to liquidate them as a class. Eventually, anyone who resists collectivization is considered a kurkul. By 1930, 1.5 million Ukrainians fall victim to Stalin's de-kulakization policies. Over the extended period of collectivization, armed de-kulakization brigades forcibly confiscate land, livestock, and other property and evict entire families. Close to 500,000 individuals in Ukraine are dragged from their homes, packed into freight trains, and shipped to remote, uninhabited areas such as Siberia, where they are left often without food or shelter. A great many, especially children, die in transit or soon thereafter. By 1932 and 1933, the Soviet government sharply increases Ukraine's production quotas, ensuring that they could not be met. Starvation becomes widespread. In the summer of 1932, a decree is implemented that calls for the arrest or execution of any person, even a child, found taking as little as a few stalks of wheat or any possible food item from the fields where he worked. By decree, discriminatory voucher systems are implemented and military blockades are erected around many Ukrainian villages, preventing the transport of food into the villages and the hungry from leaving in search of food. Brigades of young activists from other Soviet regions are brought in to sweep through the villages and confiscate hidden grain, kind of like busting in Antifa and BLM activists to Charlottesville.
Yes, it does.
And
you know,
go ahead.
Jacob, I'd briefly interrupt here, and Matt, this went on with the full knowledge of the American government under FDR. FDR knew that was going on. They sent the representative, the assistant secretary of state. The secretary of state in those days, if I'm not wrong, was Cordell Hull from Tennessee, but his assistant was the big communist, and he wasn't the only one that went and toured the Soviet Union while this genocide was going on. And later on, at one time, when questioned about it and, you know, why that was allowed to go on, he said, well, you know, they all admired Stalin, including FDR admired Stalin. The great General Dwight D. Eisenhower loved Uncle Joe Stalin. Well, anyway, the assistant secretary of state, I can't remember his name right now, but he said, well, you know, Stalin's doing the best he can to reshape a country, and he's the one that's accredited to saying, when you're going to make an omelet, you got to crack a few eggs. And I'm 90% certain I'm accurate on that. Just the big point is, our country knew that was going on. Our country was on the side of the communists then. They're on the side of the communists in the Korean War. They're on the side of the communists now, like you mentioned in Charlottesville, Jacob. And that, I'll shut up and go right back to you. You're doing a wonderful job, fella.
Imagine someone today making a comment like that. You got to crack a few eggs to make an omelet in response to the big deal that they make about, you know, abuses that may or may not have gone on during the 1960s era, because we certainly know a lot of that is embellished. But, you know, certainly some abuses happened. But imagine someone making a comment like that in response to that sort of thing. Oh, you know, imagine the outrage that would ensue. But this is, perfectly fine for this guy to have said, apparently. So,
you know, Jacob, you also mentioned class warfare, that Stalin you know, instituted. Do you or Matt, any of you two, I can see it, but I'm going to ask y'all, can y'all see any of this same technique being used in this country, class warfare going on right now?
Well, you go ahead, Matt, if you have an answer for that. I've got something to say too, but you go right ahead.
Go ahead, Matt.
I see oligarchs who are pushing the government the direction they want. Absolutely. Everybody knows our government's a bunch of puppets, and these oligarchs, they use their every bit of money they have to try to get so much more money in their coffers, because if they can push the government this way or push the government that way, then they use the police force against anyone that has anything to say against it. Like James Fields, you know, he stands up with us in Charlottesville. And then, the police force acts just as the riot brigade, basically, to take us down and ship us off to the gulag. So, absolutely, there's class warfare going on.
You know what, I'd like to comment on that, and then I'll go to Jacob, get his comment, but I'd like to comment on something me and Matt were talking about several weeks ago. Matt and I have talked about the Federal Reserve and the tax system and things like that. And Matt said, well, we can't. I still remember what Matt said. He said, people are going to a break. We'll be right back after the break, and if I don't lose my thought, I'll continue on. Well, so we'll see you right back, folks. Hang on. Hang on to your seat.
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
I'd advise Mr. Trump to stop whining and go try to make his case to get votes.
The press has created a rigged system. They even want to try and rig the election.
Well, I tell you what, it helps in Ohio that we got Democrats in charge of the machines.
And poisoned the mind of so many of our voters.
At the polling booths, where so many cities are corrupt and voter fraud is all too common. And then they say, oh, there's no voter fraud in our country.
I come from Chicago. So I want to be honest. It's not as if it's just Republicans who have monkeyed around with elections in the past. Sometimes Democrats have too. You know, whenever people are in power, they have this tendency to try to, tilt things in their direction.
There's no voter fraud.
You start whining before the game's even over. Whenever things are going badly for you and you lose, you start blaming somebody else, and you don't have what it takes to be in this job.
Hi, I'm Patty, wife of former Congressman Steve Stockman. In Congress, Steve sought impeachment of Eric Holder for his corruption of the Justice Department and his fast and furious gun running that caused Border Agent Brian Talley's death. Steve called for arrest of Lois Lerner for her contempt of Congress as it investigated her targeting of conservative nonprofit groups. After 4 years, 4 grand juries, and millions of tax dollars, Steve Stockman is in prison. His case involved 4 checks to nonprofits. DOJ has one standard for Hillary Clinton, but another for folks like President Trump and my husband. We've spent all our savings, all Steve's retirement, and much of mine. Steve Stockman has fought for you and America. Won't you join me now to fight for Steve? To help, text FIGHT to 444-999. Text FIGHT to 444-999 or go to defendapatriot.com. Defendapatriot.com.
Blood River Radio is the only news media in the United States whose sole purpose of being is to fight against the ever-rising tide of global white genocide, both soft and hard genocide, whether it is in the form of ethnic cleansing via the current massive invasion of non-white, non-Christian hordes that are overwhelming the once all-white nations of Western Europe, the United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and the United States, or via the hard genocide in South Africa, where the rape, murder, and torture of whites is an ongoing daily occurrence. Though we are a Christian brotherhood, we will cooperate with other groups in our operations if it will shorten our people's casualty list. We further pledge to you to leave the radio studio at every opportunity and take it to our churches, to our universities, and most importantly, we promise to occupy the streets. However, none of our mission can succeed without funding. Please help us all that you can and donate to our cause by going to www.bloodriverradio.com.
Hey, I'm just an old chunk of coal, but I'm gonna be a diamond.
Well, folks, the old chunk of coal, and I'm not just a chunk of coal, I am the chunk of coal. I'm the old chunk of coal, going in closer to 72 than I am 71. Well, people, I'm going to finish up on the thought I had, and then, guys, I'm going to give y'all something to think about. Lee Cochran's going to make a brief comment on a book he wants y'all to read, and then I'm going to talk back to you guys. So now, in that order, going back, me and what we were talking about before the break, we were talking about a conversation that me and Matt had some time ago. And he was wanting to know why they had the income tax. He said the income tax couldn't possibly fund. I think the budget right now, the budget for just this year alone was like $4.13 trillion. I don't know what the income tax brings in, but it doesn't bring in that much. But here's the thing. The income tax, it was there, put in place for many purposes. But one of the purposes it was put there was to keep them poor, to keep us poor. The class warfare, we're talking about class warfare when you hear people clamoring in this country about we need to stick it to the rich. In every single tax case you have, when they bring people into a tax court, when they pick the juries, they always play the juries against the defendants and say, well, you pay income tax, so don't you think they should pay income tax? It's not the idea. They never get around it. The income tax is law, illegal. It was never really, it's unconstitutional. They never get around to that. What they do, they use it to keep us all poor. And the end game is to keep us all dirt poor, all equally poor. I'll make this short. Warren Buffett, one of the richest guys in the United States, if not the world, he said, and he admitted, and he laughed about it. He said, my secretary pays more income tax than I do. He says, income tax isn't for people like me. It's for the poor people. And we'll get back to that in just a minute, to the class warfare or anything else you guys want to talk about. But now, Lee Cochran is sitting here in the station with us tonight. He's a friend of Liberty News. He's a friend of Blood River. And Lee, give him the book recommendation.
Oh, yeah. Hey, everybody. I was just, there's this book. It's called My Exploited Father-in-Law by FDR's son-in-law. And he spills the beans on FDR. He was complicit in a lot of things. And you could download it off the internet. It's about maybe 150 pages, but you can also buy it. But, you know, FDR, Russia was going to, Soviet Union was going to collapse. Talk about that starvation of the Ukrainians. But he gave them, I think, gave them special trading privileges. So he helped keep them in, helped keep the Soviets in power. I think it's mentioned in that book. And as we know, the Soviet takeover in Russia was from atheistic Jews, and they came over. It was from the top down, but nobody ever mentions that in our history books. So that's just something that y'all want to read, and I encourage everybody to get on the internet and do their own research and own decisions. And it's My Exploited Father-in-Law. I forgot the son-in-law's name, but you can find it. So I just want to let y'all know. Okay, there, Eddie.
Lee, thank you for that.
Thank you so much, Lee.
You know something else about FDR? The day that will live in infamy. Of course, he knew that the Japanese were about to attack. He'd been alerted by his generals, his admiral in the Navy. So, of course, he knew about this, and that day that will live in infamy, thanks to him, was that 2,300 American servicemen were killed. So, just to get us into a war.
Yeah, and that's,
yes, he did.
What
Lee's talking
ahead,
about
Jacob.
With the FDR aiding and abetting Soviet Russia, our Lend-Lease program is what made the Russian war machine possible. I mean, there would have been no Russian war machine without the Lend-Lease program that was sponsored by the United States government.
You know, Jacob, I've heard, I can't prove this, but I was told by a friend of my dad's that that the United States government actually sent them, the Soviet Union, the plates where they could print up a certain amount of American currency. And before we leave that, y'all, I would like to just go back on a topic that we had mentioned earlier. We talked about class warfare. We talked about, we hadn't even mentioned the gulags and the gulag archipelago with Alexander the Great, the one and only Alexander Solzhenitsyn. But this is just a kind of a tidbit. I hope it's not a rabbit trail. We were talking about, I was talking with Lee Cochran today about Tex Mars, the great one and only Tex Mars, in a documentary he put out called The American Concentration Camps. And we talk about these people think the concentration camps have been in, you know, Germany, the Soviet Union, you know, Laos under, you know, under the Red Terror there, you know, all these other countries, the Japanese concentration camps. But the Tex Mars claims, this going all the way back to the 90s, that there are like there were 134 different camps set up, prison camps set up already. One of the ones he mentioned was a place that Tex Mars himself, you know, Tex Mars was an Air Force officer. He was in this, there's an Air Force base over near, I think he said MacDill, but I'm very familiar with Camp Chaffee, Arkansas. My dad was mustered out of World War II, 1945 there. They have these big airstrips with these huge transport planes where they can bring people into these areas like Camp Chaffee. They have a big one in Oklahoma City. They have had them all over the country, and they have these giant camps set up where they can process prisoners in. You might want to research that yourself. But, I mean, if it's happened in the Soviet Union, if it's happened in Germany, don't think it can't happen here, guys. Now, I get Jacob, go back to you and Matt.
Civil War, you know, you got Camp Douglas up around Chicago, for example, where they actually termed the title the deadline. That's where that term comes from, the deadline, where they didn't even have a fence. If you just cross this point away from the camp, they shoot you dead. So, sure. Yeah, America has a long history of prison camps and prisoner of war camps and the gulags.
No doubt about that. Back to you, Jacob.
Yeah, absolutely right on that, Matt. I mean, going back to the 1800s, even I understand there's camps that the Yankees operated that put what allegedly happened in Andersonville to shame. You know, and then there's been books written on embellishment of what was going on in Andersonville, too. But there were Yankee camps that you know, were just as bad, if not worse, as that prison camp was claimed to have been, and you never even hear about them. So, absolutely. But getting back to the we were almost to the end of that Holodomor timeline. Do you guys want to finish that up?
Please, sure. Please do. Please do.
All right, let's see here. We were on 1932 to 1933. Okay. Let me find where I was real quick here. All right. Brigades of young activists from other Soviet regions are brought in to these villages mentioned that were being blocked off and everything by Stalin. And these brigades of young activists are being sent around to sweep through these villages and confiscate the grain that people are hiding in their homes and wherever, in their cellars, wherever they can, taking this stuff out of these people's homes just to ensure that no one is able to even, you know, sneak away a little bit to keep food on the table for their own family. And Stalin states of Ukraine that the national question is in essence a rural question. And he and his commanders determined to, quote, teach a lesson through famine. Their rhetoric. This isn't even the rhetoric of the people who put together this excellent website here. This is quoting Stalin. To teach a lesson through famine and ultimately to deal a crushing blow to the backbone of Ukraine, its rural population. Keep in mind here, Stalin is not talking about a military insurgent force. He's not talking about an invading army. He's talking about his own people, the people of Ukraine, that he's, you know, seized power and presumed to rule over. Then as 1933 rolls around, by the June of that year, at the height of this famine created by Stalin, people in Ukraine are dying at the rate of 30,000 a day. Nearly
30,000 a day.
30,000 a day.
Nearly just let that sink in. I mean, I'm sorry, Jacob. That's just incredible to me. You know, Jacob, not to interrupt you. Another thing Stalin was doing at the time, he was bringing in. You're talking about it was full scale genocide. He was also practicing, I guess you'd call it, a soft genocide, in that he was bringing in people from all over the other parts of the vast Soviet Union, peoples that were totally unlike the Ukrainians, you know, different ethnicities. And he got ethnic warfare going, you know, it could have got ethnic warfare going there. But he wanted to totally destroy any sense of nationalism in that country there. You know, you hear nowadays the term nationalism has been made out to be a boogie word. Well, listen, I hear the music coming, guys. We're getting ready to go to a break, and we'll continue this conversation as soon as we come back to the break, guys. Hang on, fellas.
We fought, we learned, we struggled, we won. Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together.
My brother and two other boys were the ones that got in the car with her, and she was drunk. The road that goes to her house is like really windy, and she was taking that road at 80 to 100 miles per hour and hit into the road barriers. Her door flung open. She ran out across the street to get away from it, and the other three boys were trapped in it, and the car exploded. And then when my mom found out about it, she called me at work. I don't care what you have to do, just get up here to the hospital. You know, I parked my car and I went inside, and they took us back to this little room. My mom told me that Jay had been killed, and I lost it. The other people, so they're like, well, you can drink, but just be careful when you drink, you know? So I don't want anything to do with it, because it took my brother away from me.
A public service message from The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Can a nation conceived in liberty carry its head high if it denies protection to the youngest and most vulnerable of its citizens? Can a country founded on God-given rights continue to thrive without understanding that life is a precious gift from our Creator? As a physician, I have looked into the eyes of 1-pound babies. I have cradled their small bodies in the palm of one hand. I defy those who are careless, who would disregard life and look at these tiny little miracles and say, we're not going to protect that.
But I believe there will come a time when we are all judged on whether or not we took a stand in defense of all life from the moment of conception until our last natural breath. One thing I promise you, I will always take a stand for life.
I want to dedicate this song to Mr. Rupert Murdoch.
Thank you.
Okay, people, we're back to the break. I hope you're enjoying the way we're doing this tonight. If you've been listening to us since we've been on the air, we've always had a guest on the first and second hour. I decided tonight is to let our two co-hosts come in and do without a guest, and we would do the way we're doing now, kind of like a round table. I thought we needed a little, you know, spices is of the life. Spices is the best life. You know, we need to change up the way we're doing it. But I'd like to throw some stuff out there to you people and to our co-host. You know, I'd like to mention these, bring up these terms if you've ever heard of them. Waco, Mount Carmel, Ruby Ridge. Those situations there where American citizens were murdered, flat out murdered. No one will ever know how many people the United States government, how many citizens there, our own United States citizens were killed, burned alive. I'm talking about suckling infant babes, toddlers, children, teenagers, adults, men and women were murdered at Waco there. And no one will ever know. The evidence was bulldozed up and carted off immediately. It was a crime scene. The government didn't give a crap about a crime scene. They wanted to destroy all the evidence. There was the Waco Mount Carmel. Ruby Ridge, we talked about this on this show. A government sniper killed. This is in our dear United States of America. We never make mistakes. We sit here and we lecture other countries in the world about their cruelties. At Ruby Ridge, a man was set up there. I think his name was Randy Weaver. We had an American, United States sniper working for the FBI. Ron Carlucci, I think was his name, was the sniper's name. He killed a woman while she was holding a suckling babe in her arms. Later, when they asked him when he was grilled about that, they said, could you not see what was going on there? Could you not see that with a woman with a child in her hands? He said, I saw her all too well. He said, I'll kind of paraphrase what he said. He said, I can shoot a silver dollar at 200 meters at that range every single time. I'd like to say something else, too. We had a Japanese prisoner of war camp right here in these United States, and they weren't enemy combatants. They were Japanese citizens that were living primarily on the West Coast in California. They were some of the best farmers you'd ever seen. They were rounded up and put in the prisoner of war camps pretty much for the duration of the camps. And I'd like to point this out, too, to you liberals out there, you know, to you communist and you FDR worshipers, all this crap, the Japanese prisoner war camps of World War II was done under your beloved FDR, his orders. And Waco, Mount Carmel, Ruby Ridge, we're talking about, was under your precious, precious William Jefferson Clinton and Butch Reno, his chief law enforcement, the attorney general. Yeah, that's who did it. That's exactly who did it, people. Now, guys, I'm going to go back to y'all with that. And who wants to go first? Matt, you want to go first?
Yeah, I just want to comment and say, look at the picture of Yalta. If any of you doubt, look at the picture at Yalta. You see Winston Churchill, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and Joseph Stalin sitting together. These people were working with the communists. And true, in fact, these people were the communists. So don't be mistaken. Don't be mistaken about what we're under, what we're living under. And with that, I just want to kick the notion. We were talking about American gulags, and one of our very own has just been sentenced to a minimum or a maximum of life in prison, James Fields. And, Jacob, I was curious if you had any input on that or any say on that.
Well, in regards to what happened with Alex Fields, that was one of the things that happened at Charlottesville that I wasn't around for that day. But since then, of course, I've scoured all the footage that I could find of the car hitting the crowd. And one of the things that immediately jumps out about it, I mean, this isn't just one video on YouTube. This is from looking at all the available footage I could find. One of the things that really jumps out is the over-the-top dramatic language that was used in the court proceeding. Where they basically described it as though he careened, wildly careened down the street into this crowd of people. When in every video clip you can see of his car, you can see the brake lights come on. You can see people hitting the side of his car before he even sped up a little bit. And it's on record that he was only even going 20 or 30 miles per hour, I think it was, when he hit the crowd of people. So it's pretty obvious that this is one of those sedan kind of situations, and there wasn't really any kind of actual interest on the part of those involved in the court proceeding to examine the evidence and make it a judgment accordingly. He's very clearly being made an example of, and getting back to the whole class warfare thing, yeah, I mean, this could definitely be setting a very dangerous precedent for throwing the book at anyone who's deemed a terrorist, you know, who happens to be white, for what they've done or what they haven't done, in the case of Alex Jones.
Also, Jacob, I'd like to interject this, and I'm going to shut up and go back to Matt. I was there, you were there, Matt was there, we were all at Charlottesville. I'm sure y'all saw the same thing I did. I saw numerous thugs, left-wing thugs, carrying rifles, AR-15s, et cetera, carrying rifles. Now, I wasn't there where James Field drove his car, but the reports I've got and the videos I've seen, there was a mad mob there beating on his car with clubs. I mean, he was totally surrounded. His car was totally surrounded. If they had got him out of that car, I have no doubt it was a very high probability he would have been killed right there. He would at least had the crap beat out of him. He knew that. And the man was a young man. He was panicked and trying to escape. But the rifles, I mean, they failed to mention that in court. Rifles were being pointed at that man. And, what were those people doing in the streets where there's supposed to be automobile traffic? And that, Matt, I believe you were getting ready to say something, Matt.
I was going to mimic what Dr. Hill said. We can't say it any better than what he said. If they think that they're just going to push down one of our guys and get away with it, and that be the final solution to the alt-right problem, they are completely dead wrong. We're not done. We're absolutely not done, and we're not going to let this destroy our cause. We're coming back, and we gotta fight this to the very bitter end, because we are under a complete communist regime. All it ends is, you mentioned Alexander Solzhenitsyn. If we let this continue to go on, all it ends is them rounding every one of us up who has anything to say for Christ, for Christianity, for our heritage, for our ancestry, for our land, for our people. Anything to say about that at all, they're going to round you up and ship you off in the cattle train to the gulags. So don't dare let them get away with this one man. We cannot let them get away with this. And so we're not going to. Blood River Radio certainly isn't going to. Dr. Hill's not going to. Back to y'all.
I couldn't have said that better. You go ahead. Go ahead, Jake. I was going to say that better. You know, people into I don't like really the term alt-right too much. Like in our commercial says, we are of the hard right. We're the hardest of the hard right, of the hardcore of the hard right. And that's who we're, we're a small percentage, but we're never going to lay down. I don't care if we lose, we're never going to lay down. But we're back with that, Jacob. I didn't want to cut you off. Go back. Take it up from there, Jacob.
No problem at all. And amen to what both of you are saying. Now, tying this in with Holodomor and everything, though, because this all ties in with that really well. And Eddie, you were already tying it in with what we're seeing here in the present. I mean, it's important to look back on these things and remember what happened, because, we all know the old adage about those who don't know their history are doomed to repeat it. But, this is even more relevant right here and right now than just being a historical event and a tragic genocide that we need to remember and look back on with great solemnity and whatnot. What we're seeing right now with Alex Fields is it's a prime example of the class warfare that Matt's talking about. Matt was talking about it on the elite side of things and how it's being implemented economically, but we are literally getting into a more pronounced version of it even than just economic considerations, because what we're seeing now is it's a dynamic where it's perfectly okay. It is perfectly okay to say the most wildly, unimaginably bigoted, hateful, and prejudiced things about one group of people and one group of people only. This is the new surf class. I mean, we're seeing a dynamic unfold before our very eyes where the new, surf class, or at least what the enemy would have to be the new surf class, is white people. And that may sound a little bit dramatic to some people, but you don't have to look very far. Just go on YouTube and watch compilations of SJW professors and people out on the streets and the things that they say day in and day out. It's you can take things like the most over-the-top and wild stereotypes and portrayals in movies and TV shows of the classic evil white racist or whatever, you know, Klan member guy, and substitute white people for the rhetoric that they'll put in these ridiculous portrayals in movies and TV shows. And we're literally seeing that happen right now. And the developments with Alex Fields is a great example of that, because we see him being railroaded very clearly in this case.
Well, Jacob, Matt, and our audience, I hear the music. We've come to the end of our second hour, second and final hour. I want to thank you guys, both of you two wonderful young men, for coming in and making Blood River Radio what it is. Thank you to Sam, and thank you, Nicole. Thank you, audience, for listening in. God bless you. Please keep us in your prayers. And God willing, we will see you on the 15th of December, same place, same time. Good night, all.